Welcome to the People of Packaging podcast, where we introduce people to the world of packaging and the people of packaging to the world. Here are your hosts, Adam Peek and Ted Tate.
Well, season three of the People of Packaging podcast has been a season of firsts. This episode with Jib Hunt, who is the CEO of Kemper Snowboards, is the first professional athlete who then became a designer and marketer with packaging and now bought and is reviving this brand, Kemper Snowboards. Super fascinating conversation. It's also the first time that we have had a sponsor, and we have been so fortunate and so blessed by the folks over at Doxalent. You should go to peopleofpackaging.com. So that's www.peopleofpackaging.com, where you can get your free ebook and transform the way that you work with your packaging specification management. Just like Jib and Kemper are transforming the snowboard game, you can have that transformation at your job and with your company. So get your specifications done right with Doxalent. So go to www.peopleofpackaging.com and get that free ebook. It really helps out our podcast to be able to keep cranking out these episodes with this killer content. And without further ado, let's get to Jib Hunt, CEO of Kemper Snowboards. So I am super excited as a now proud, a shareholder, investor in Kemper Snowboards. Is that how, what's the preferred vernacular for somebody who went through was it Start Engine? Is that what it was?
Yeah, Start Engine. Yeah, shareholder, equity owner.
Equity owner sounds so cool. A proud equity owner at Kemper, I get to sit down virtually and hopefully soon in person up in beautiful Park City with the CEO of Kemper Snowboards, Jib Hunt. So Jib, hey, welcome to your most famous moment on a packaging podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So you are officially the first, I think this is true, the first former professional athlete that we've had on our podcast. There's not really a big crossover between like professional athletes and packaging, though I'm sure it exists out there somewhere. But so I'm excited to hear about your journey and how it's sort of interacted with packaging, just not even at Kemper, but just kind of in your history, and then just really digging into the rebirth of the brand and how exciting it is and the cool stuff that you guys have planned for 2021 and beyond. So why don't you just introduce yourself and kind of give everyone who's listening a little bit of a background as to who you are, and then we'll get into Kemper.
Awesome. So my name is Jib Hunt. I'm CEO of Kemper Snowboards. I am from Northern New Hampshire originally, born and raised there. It's where I learned how to ski when I was 3. And when I was 12, I switched over to snowboarding and never looked back. And that was back in 1987. And yeah, I was, my friends and I picked it up pretty quickly and we pushed each other. That's kind of the way it worked back then, because we were pioneering the sport in our area. And, so I became a sponsored amateur rider, which turned into being a sponsored professional rider for 5 years. And for the record, I'm more of a professional designer and marketer. I've got more years doing that than snowboarding professionally.
Got it.
So that relates a little more to packaging. But I went to school for design while I was touring the world, snowboarding and getting paid for that. And when college was over, I had an opportunity to actually pack my bags and go right up to Burlington, Vermont, and work at Burton. And I was the design director there for all the soft goods and apparel for 5 years. And then after that, I moved down to New York City. I was recruited by Virgin Mobile USA. So I helped them launch the brand in the US with a team of other creatives and marketers. And from there, I actually went back into apparel, working with a lot of New York City streetwear brands, licensed apparel brands, and eventually I morphed into marketing, running global marketing for ad tech companies like MediaMath and Seismic and Ghostery, which is an online privacy company. And lived in the city for a while and then moved out to New Jersey when I started having a family. And all along, been snowboarding the whole time. I was driving 4 hours, 6 hours to go back to my parents in New Hampshire. And we're just kind of getting commuting 3 hours a day round trip. And we just kind of got sick of that. We wanted to do something different. And at the same time, I was getting the itch to get back into snowboarding. And I had an opportunity to revive Kemper, which is actually the second board I ever rode. Cool. And moved out to Park City almost two years ago.
Awesome. Well, I barely beat you out here. I moved out about 3 years ago from Colorado, but it's been great being out here in Utah. So, and you know what I just realized is I had introduced you via, was it via email? I don't even remember. But my boss, who was a professional snowboarder and is now in the packaging industry, who I've never had on the podcast, he's going to be like, why? You could have just talked to me. And he actually, I think he rode for Burton in the late 80s. So, and has told me some, I'm excited to just be a fly on the wall when eventually we can get up to Park City and have an adult beverage or two and hear the stories.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. Your boss's last name is Sims, which was back in the day, in the late 80s, early 90s, it was Burton, Sims, and Kemper were the top three brands. And I guess, you know, Jake must have pulled his heartstrings better than Tom Sims.
I can't speak to however all that went down, but that was actually the first question I had when he was like, yeah, I rode for Burton. I'm like, your last name's Sims. That seems like a pretty easy match. Like,
But his buddy Adam Merriman was a team rider for Kemper back then.
Got it.
That's kind of how this all intertwines.
That's cool. Yeah, it's really I would imagine that the cross section between you know, professional riders in the 80s who are still, you know, kind of around the industry today is probably, you know, decently small. I'm sure it's still, you know, there's still a lot of people, but it was such a small niche industry back then. And it's obviously exploded now. It's nothing but a niche industry any longer. You know, it's like you said, you guys kind of helped pioneer it. And what was that like? So you had mentioned you were getting your design degree, and I'm excited to get into the packaging component, but I want to land on this for a second because I'm curious, when you're touring the world with this, you know, sort of new sport, first of all, what sorts of events were happening? I think a lot of us who grew, like I started snowboarding in 1999 when I was 19 years old. So I was, you know, it was already decently established by then, right? So when you show up somewhere in Europe or, you know, a place like that, and it's this weird kind of industry. Even in the late 90s, it was just like, oh, they're destroying the mountain and they're doing all this stuff. And like skiing is the only pure sport. What was that like? Were people coming out? Were they intrigued? Were they upset? Were there people yelling at you? Take a trip down memory lane.
Yeah. I mean, skateboarding went through the same thing. When it was new, when snowboarding was new, it was like five or six of us my friends, we were the one only ones doing it on our mountain, which is Cranmore Mountain in North Conway, New Hampshire. And yeah, we were, you know, so different. You know, it's kind of like, oh, here come the snowboarder punks. But, you know, we were building jumps on the trails and hiking, and you know, and eventually we talked the mountain into giving us an area for a half pipe, and we actually had to dig it all by hand, where now it's, you know, perfectly cut with a pipe dragon. None of that existed back then. And yeah, so, you know, over, and that was the way it was, you know, for everyone at that time, is just having to, you know, the criticism from the skiers at that time who, you know, didn't believe in it. And that's, you know, not putting down skiers, because honestly, it's, I think it's just the people that are just not, were not open-minded at all. I mean, I say this all the time. There's skiers and snowboarders I prefer not to hang around or ride next to. It's just comes down to who the person is. Like, I've had some of the most fun days, you know, right alongside a skier. So it's not right. About that. It's just who embraced it and who didn't back then. But yeah, the events and everything, it was fun, because when the company started, you know, realizing they were making money at it, and we were getting to have fun at their expense, go to events, big air events. We, I remember being in San Francisco in the summertime, because I would coach up at Mount Hood. All the camps are up there, and a bunch of us pros all went down to San Francisco, and they made us a big air jump. You know, they blew snow, and it was during like a rock concert, like a legitimate, like real bands. It's like a summer, like almost like a Lollapalooza type setup, but we were a snowboard jump in the middle of all that.
That's crazy.
That was fun.
Yeah, and that was those are the sort of events that you did, were like big air. What's the coolest trick you've ever landed?
Oh man. So I did big air, I did half pipe, I did slope style, and then I also did border cross.
Oh wow.
Which is where six snowboarders go down the track at the same time. It's in the Olympics. And back when I was riding too, this was all pre-X Games, pre-Olympics. The X Games just kind of started right when I switched over to working at Burton. But back then, yeah, there wasn't really, it was more about spinning. Some guys were flipping, but it was more about spinning. So like 720 was kind of like the extent of it back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, and grabbing and just having good style. I mean, it's, you know, way beyond that these days, you know,
sure.
You know, people spinning 1080s and 1440s with, you know, a flip and two grabs in there.
It's nuts. Yeah, I totally agree. And I recently saw that maybe one of the most famous snowboarders, you could probably take maybe out, Sean White was riding a Kemper board, right? Up in...
right now, Jackson Hole.
Jackson Hole, that's what it was.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks back in February. And what was going on? Another really good pro snowboarder, his name's Travis Rice. He's known for big mountain riding. He's based out of Jackson Hole. He created this event called Natural Selection, where they'd go up in the summertime and they'd build all these jumps out of wood and basically this course. And then come wintertime, it's all powder and snow, and riders would go through it and do the tricks, and they get judged. So that was going on. That was one thing. It dumped snow for like 3 days. So I was riding like knee deep powder.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I went up there for a couple of days. And then, Sean is a free agent, and his agent is a friend of mine, and he wanted to try a powder board while he was up there, because he's always in the half pipe, and it's a totally different board. So we were able to get him one, and he rode it for a week, and it looked like he had a lot of fun on it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, let's engage the kind of the marketing and designer person. So you decide you're going to get out of, call it like the rat race of going to the city, you know, 3-hour commutes, all that sort of stuff, and return back to this passion of snowboarding. So what was it about Kemper that made you think we can do something here? I think we might have something with this brand.
Yeah. I mean, it was, a couple of the companies that are still around, and they've been around since the beginning, like GNU and LibTech and Burton, for example, they would bring back some of their old graphics as limited releases. And so a lot of people, you know, 35 and older, who are young enough to own the original board, you know, now they have, you know, more money and they can pick up that extra board. They might just hang it on their wall and never ride it. So that was going on. In addition to that, there are many groups on Facebook, you know, with 10,000 plus members per group that buy, sell, collect, and trade all the old boards. Basically, they're, you know, some people have hundreds of boards, and it's like collecting baseball cards. And a lot of people are like myself, I never kept any of my original boards. I sold them or gave them away. And looking back, you know, it's like Star Wars. You wish you kept all your original toys because they're worth money. And same thing with snowboarding. So people are like going to play it against orcs and yard sales, trying to find these boards and just finding, like, you know, these amazing classic original boards. So that kind of piqued my interest. And then also Sims came back, mm-hmm. and they went through a couple different owners or just directions. And I'm like, well, I think I could do this better. I'm sure, you know, there's some brands out there. And so I just researched, you know, I knew all the brands and researched which ones might be able to get my hands on and the trademark for. And I was able to pull it off with Kemper. And actually, it was just, like I said, it was one of the top three brands mm-hmm. back then. I rode one. And I just think that in general, snowboarding had gotten stale and a little bit boring over the years. Not the act of actually riding the board, that's always fun, but the industry, you know, needed a little something different.
Yeah, no, and no doubt.
And that's why, you know, you saw it when your son was in the lift line and everyone's like stopping him, asking about a Kemper because they probably had one when they were younger. And, you know, it was like, took them back 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. What Jib's referring to is kind of before the call, I was letting him know. So my son's 13, is super, just like gotten the snowboard bug and it's been cool. And so I got him a Kemper board, and there is a level of confidence, I think, that comes from having kind of a new board that people are like, hey, that's really cool. 'Cause his ability, like, he became a better snowboarder, but I think a lot of it was just mental. You know, he went from like his little beginner board that we got him when he was like 10. Now he's like an adult human. He's like 5'10". And at the time he was smaller. So he was riding the small board, and now he's on like his big boy board. But you couple that with, like, we go up to Snow Basin, and you know, there were four or five people the last time we went up there who were like, oh man, where'd you, like, asking him, like, that board's so dope, where'd you get it? And it was that nostalgia. And, you know, really the timing when you kind of look at where you're seeing a lot of things, like I saw, like, Animaniacs came back, and like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is, you know, like, it's back with clothes. And Yeah, I bought a pair of Zubaz pants the other day because those were now a thing again. And it's just sort of like that late 80s, early 90s nostalgia, because you're right. You know, I'm 40 and I certainly have more disposable income today than when I was 20. So if it had been 20 years ago, it wouldn't A, be nostalgic. It'd be kind of like, that's my parents' board. You know, it wouldn't have had the same sort of appeal that I think it does now, where you've got like from sneakers to apparel to, you know, snowboarding and on and on and on. It's like technology is increasing, but I'm just waiting for like the Zach Morris Saved by the Bell phone to come back. Just see people walking around with, you know, these big giant cell phones.
Well, the other weird thing is about snowboarding is even the generation that's a little bit older than me, like for example, like Jake Burton, who passed away a couple of years, he would have been in his mid 60s, and he's got three boys and they're all in their late 20s. And even though I'm 45, I'm 20 years younger than Jake, I have kids, but Jake and I are in the same category where we're the first generation where we have kids that snowboard.
Right.
There was no one ahead of us.
That's a great
point. My parents didn't snowboard, they skied. And so it is a little bit, it's kind of funny. Like I started snowboarding in 1987, and that's over 30 years ago.
Yeah. That's such a great point though, that this is the first, like our kids, whatever that is, Gen Z or whatever in younger, that's kind of the first like multi-generation where it's like, yeah, I grew up snowboarding and I love going snowboarding with my kids and I'm teaching all my kids how to snowboard. My wife snowboarded because we grew up in Colorado. So that's like what we love to go do is take our kids up and go snowboarding. And some of them are really young, you know, our five-year-olds still trying to figure it out, but it's just so cool. You know, but up until this moment, I'd never actually thought like, oh, this is the first time that this has happened. You know, like our generation is really like, there's probably really few like grandparents who are snowboarding with their grandkids.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, there might be someone, you know, that had kids younger or like
right.
in their 60s, like that could happen, but there could be the second or third generation snowboarding. But basically, yeah, that's like, we help shape the sport.
Right.
You know, anyone that snowboarded back then or started snowboarding back then. And the other thing is like, honestly, like the teenagers and 20-year-olds snowboarding now, they don't really have any idea like about the history of the snowboarding and all the riders and players. I mean, there were a handful of snowboard, you know, a small amount of snowboard companies when it first started. It blew up in the late 90s, early 2000s to like over 200 snowboard brands. Jeez. And then it consolidated way down. And, you know, for the past, I don't know, call it 10 years, it's been, you know, all the brands that have been left over, some other ones, newer ones have popped up, like net new companies. And then obviously we brought back Kemper, so now we're added to the mix. But it really got big and then it tightened up again.
Yeah, that makes sense. So within this kind of market space, you're a marketing and design person. It seems like your Venn diagram has connected a little bit, where you can connect your passion with your professional expertise, which is incredible. So within this space, you've got Kemper, you know, kind of right in the middle of these two connections. And within that, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. Obviously, you're the CEO of a company. Do you guys have many employees?
No, it it was just me for the past 2.5-3 years. And then I literally just hired employee number one last month.
Cool. Yeah. Well, congratulations. I mean, that's like that I've done a fair amount of just like business study, like the study of businesses just in my, and I don't think people fully appreciate how hard it is to go from like one to two people. It's a big, like that's a big step in the development of a company. So that's incredible. Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like having a kid in a way,
right?
you know, you're just like taking care of yourself and, you know, you have a, you know, a boyfriend or girlfriend or your spouse. And it's like, all right, like if I had to, I'll, you know, sleep in my car. But once you have your first kid, you're like, I got to worry about someone else other than myself now.
Right.
And it's kind of the same thing, you know, with a company is like, you know, you want to hire good people, you want to keep them, but ultimately you want to make the right decisions for the company and, you know, the well-being of your employees too.
Yeah, no doubt. So as you've got products that are out there. We've talked a little bit about how you have a background in design and packaging, and you know it's this new fresh brand. It's exciting. People are getting nostalgic about it. I'm curious, what is the role, or do you find yourself like waking up at 2 a.m. thinking about the packaging of your product, or like what role does packaging play in the importance of, you know, not only a snowboard, but also you've got apparel, you've got decals, you know, you've got some other products coming out, I'm sure, that are in the product mix for 2021 and beyond. How much do you think about packaging as the CEO of this rebranded, resuscitated company?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, like the branding of the brand is super important. So how do you make everything look like Kemper at the end of the day, whether it's a keychain all the way to a snowboard? And, you know, to a certain extent, snowboards with their graphics, you know, that's kind of the packaging, the wrap on the graphic. And that's usually what draw someone to a board, and then obviously it comes down to quality, construction, what type of board and what type of rider they are. But you know, even the snowboards have packaging. Every board has a we call them a silent salesman card, which is stuck on the base of the board at the store, and it has all the tech specs and the story behind the board. So literally it's selling you as you read that, you know, so you take it to the cash register. And so that's part of it. You know, the boards are shrink wrapped. And then there's barcode stickers, and there's even ambassador stickers applied to that to get them to join the Kemper crew, mm-hmm. which is our ambassador program. And then that is put into a zipper bag for more production. And even when we ship boards to shops or e-commerce, our snowboard boxes, which is your son received one, you know, they're fully printed with a graphic and Kemper. So, I mean, that right there is just, you know, just a snowboard. So there is packaging and thought put around it. And then that just trickles into other items we're working on for next year. We're going to have bindings and split board skins, which will all come in cardboard boxes, and those have to be aesthetically linked in with the Kemper look and feel, and hang tags on apparel. So, and I was saying before we hit record, you know, even the Kemper store, like when you walk in there, everything has to kind of work together and look and feel the same. So yeah, packaging is definitely important, and there's a lot of considerations even at retail. Is, you know, what's going to grab someone's attention? What is it, a cool, unique way to package the product? can they take the product out of the packaging and touch and feel it? And then how do you get it back? Can you get it back in the box so that, you know, it looks nice for the next person that comes up and sees it? So there's right. all that stuff in the back of my mind that if I'm not doing it today, we'll be doing it eventually. And, you know, that's, it's all important, and quality and unique designs. It's all wrapped into that process.
For sure. So you kind of hit on a couple of topics that come up, you know, understandably fairly frequently on our podcast, and it's sort of balancing these components of packaging as functional and packaging as branding. And what is, I mean, you can't afford to have a board scratched or nicked or broken when it's shipping. I mean, these boards are, I don't mean to say, like, you know, if you're shipping a bag of chips, yeah, it's important. But if the bag of chips shows up crumbled, you just ship them another bag of chips. Yeah, that sucks. But, you know, these are $600-$700 boards in some cases. And, you know, if that gets damaged, that comes right out of your second employee's salary potentially, right? Like there's a lot of, that's a hard hit for any company, especially as a small company. So, you know, packaging as like protective insurance for, is most of your business, by the way, direct to consumer, just through e-commerce, or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little, I mean, we're doing a lot with our distributors and our wholesale retail partners. It's growing. I'd say maybe it's about 20-25% direct to consumer.
Okay.
25%. But yeah, and like, I mean, we made some moves this year instead of you, because when you pack a board in a box, usually you have like foam end caps to cover the tip and tail, and then you can put some in the middle. What we did this year was we went a little more environmentally friendly, and we made the end caps out of cardboard. Mm-hmm. So we weren't using foam, but that was one way to, you know, rethink it a little bit differently than we're still protecting the board, but we're hopefully helping save the planet a little bit at the same time.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, I noticed that when AJ was opening his up. So that's cool. And then as you're kind of growing, how many is it? Was this kind of your first official like snowboard season that you were really up and going, or was it the second, or where does 2020, 2021 fall?
Yeah. So, 2018, I started putting this all together in the summertime, and I got some boards and I only sold direct in the winter of 2018. So it wasn't really like a full winter. Last winter, which was 2019-20, we were out here in Park City, and we were, you know, that's officially like, I'd call it year one. This winter is officially like year two, where we're
got it.
You know, we're up and running and we're doing it. So now going into, I mean, we're already producing boards for next winter already. So
that's cool. 20, that's exciting.
21, 22 will be like our first legit third winter.
Cool. Let me ask one more question on the packaging and then we'll kind of wrap it up. So when it comes to your, like the color schemes, obviously there's a lot of like, it seems like you're holding the nostalgia from the original, especially on the boards and even the, you know, the gator and the socks. And I'm trying to think of what other products you guys have. You're sort of holding that color scheme and that nostalgia. Is that still kind of the plan as it translates into your retail packaging and direct to consumer packaging, and, you know, even thinking about selling products on, you know, through your website and having, you know, good product images and packaging images, is that, from a marketing standpoint, is that a big part of of the Kemper brand is holding those color schemes, holding those patterns and the big bold colors. And I even think you connect it back to like, this was actually, I think AJ got Adam Merriman's old board. Is that still kind of going forward part of it? Or are you going to be looking to branch out into some other areas? You don't have to give away any secrets, but.
No. That's what makes us unique. I mean, it's the DNA of the Kemper brand. And yeah, next year we're every model we're bringing back one classic graphic per model, where in the past two seasons we offered like multiple years of graphics per model. So next year it's one classic graphic per model, and then we have a new graphic, but it's still all neon bright colors, retro looking, but it's a net new graphic. And
got it.
Bindings, we're bringing back the original colorways. When we do outerwear, we'll bring back the prints and the colors and pullover anoraks. My thought process is, the retro trend might die down over the next 3 to 5 years, but it is going to be part of our DNA. So as we evolve, you know, there'll be new things, new graphics, but I think like that, you know, the pink, blue and green Kemper three colors, like we'll tie that through and brights. Yeah. Cause that's kind of like that's our thing, is like, we're loud and bright, but vivid colors. And it doesn't, you know, it could be any, it doesn't matter really what the subject matter of the artwork is, but if we apply like those colors, you know, and then we might like throw people off and do like, you know, like a black board or something.
Right.
But yeah, I think it will, that's part of our DNA, and that's kind of that is what makes us different. And I think we'll,
cool,
figure out a way to keep that going.
You still get to do a lot of the graphic design yourself?
I actually do all of it myself.
You do all of the graphic design. So you are sales, marketing, I'm sure there's some accounting that's involved. Now you're HR, because you got an employee, you've got distribution, operations, supply chain. What else would I be missing? Janitor, I'm sure you got to clean up after yourself.
I was actually mopping our new warehouse the other day because we were setting it up. Design. I mean, design for me is the fun part, and product test, you know, the team riders can product test. I have independent sales reps and distributors. They sell, but I don't have an in-house salesperson managing them yet, but I do have people out selling for me, but I am heavily involved. And the new hire is taking a lot off my plate. His background is finance and operations. So
cool.
All the numbers and accounting and, you know, helping with shipping and Shopify and all the logistics of that. And then it's just another set of hands here. You know, we were cutting plywood yesterday to make, you know, workstations for shipping and, you know, doing a lot of hands-on stuff still, setting up our new spot.
The adventures of, hopefully there are other small business owners out there who are like, yeah, my first job in packaging, I worked for my uncle out in Carlsbad, California. It's Peak Packaging Solutions. And I used to have to get back there, and there was like 3 or 4 employees. And, you know, I was folding up boxes and putting together crates and loading them into the delivery truck. It was all hands. And then it was like customer service, and then you're doing procurement, and it was sort of like all hands on deck. And, you know, for me, it was such an incredible learning experience. And I'm sure for you, it's just been this wild ride of learning and growing both personally and professionally, and, you know, understanding what you're good at, what you suck at, and then, you know, hiring other people. And I can only imagine the journey that you're on and that you're going to continue to go on. So it's fun, yeah, fun to be a small part of it.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Knowing how to do as many different parts of the business when it's your business, like at the beginning, you have to do it all. And then when you can afford it, you bring in people that are better than you and specialize in certain areas. And yeah, you can have your input on how you'd like to have it done. And they might have obviously ways they want to do it and make it even better. And you got to be open to that. But at the end of the day, it's your business. So, you know, you got to know how everything should be done or keep your eye on all the different parts of your business, even though other people might be running it for you. It's just, you know, good to just, you know, have your finger at least everything so you understand, you know, what's going on.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Well, Jib, how do people, again, if we're talking about cross sections, so hopefully there are packaging people who are designers or engineers or whatever, but who also love snowboarding. And they're like, I totally loved Kemper growing up, or I've never heard of this brand before. And they want to go check out what you got going on. So what's the best way for somebody to interact with your brand, you know, Instagram or website, or tell that person like, hey, this is what you need to do.
Yeah. So I'd say the website for sure, which is Kemper-Snowboards. So Kemper-snowboards.com. You can see all the boards there and all the other items like apparel and accessories. And then definitely go to Instagram, Kemper Snowboards on Instagram. We have tons of photos of our riders now and tons of photos of all the riders and boards from back in the day. So you can get the full flavor of and history of the brand and, you know, the differences between back then and now, but how it all connects.
Awesome. Well, we believe that packaging is awesome on our podcast. And I will say, if you want to go to the mountain and you want to ride and you want other people to be like, wow, that snowboard is awesome. I saw it, you know, I've experienced it. So you've done a great job designing it. The packaging was great. I actually did an unboxing video, with my son when he was opening it up, just to kind of go through the experience. So that'll be, right around the same time the podcast releases.
Awesome.
So you can kind of share that. So, I'll make sure all those links are put into the show notes so they can connect up, with the website and with the Instagram page. And, Jib, it's been awesome getting to chat with you. I hope it's the first of many, cause I think you've got a great story and a cool brand, and it's just getting started. So, best of luck to you, and hopefully can make my way up I-80 and, we can get that beer soon.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. And, actually my pass has, 6 days left at Snow Basin, so I could head up your way too.
Oh man, we should. Okay. We could try to make that happen. All right.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jib. Appreciate it.
So that'll do it for another episode of the People of Packaging podcast. Huge thanks to Jib Hunt from Kemper Snowboards. If you go to their website, which is, he said at the end, Kemper-snowboards.com, you can find the link in the bottom in the show notes. You can submit your email address and get 10% off, at least as of this recording. So I don't know how long that'll last, but go ahead and get it done. There's still time during this season to be out there just riding a sweet snowboard, see some cool packaging, and really just support a really awesome product. Another reminder to go to www.peopleofpackaging.com and get your free ebook. We've also, myself and Avelio Matos, have started the Packaging Tips newsletter, which is a daily email with some packaging information. So you can go to www.packaging.tips. and sign up there. So lots of cool things. Get a snowboard, get a free ebook, and get signed up to get some packaging news delivered to you daily. Next week, I'm going to be interviewing George Dempsey from Dempsey International and Raptor Packaging, and it's going to be another good one. Thanks, everybody.